Welcome, listeners, to another episode of 10 Minutes of Truth with your host, Sean A. Barksdale. Today, we're delving into the world of automobile purchases, services, and preventative maintenance. Joining us is a special guest, Mark Dalton from Terry Auto Softballs in Virginia and the Terry Auto Group in Lynchburg, Virginia. Mark's commitment to the community and his extensive knowledge of the automobile industry makes him the perfect guide for today's discussion. We're thrilled to have him on board to share invaluable insights into choosing the right vehicle, navigating dealership relationships, and mastering the intricacies of automobile finance. But that's not all. Mark's expertise extends to the crucial topic of preventative maintenance, ensuring your investment stays protected and your journey on the road remains smooth. So buckle up, folks, as we embark on this enlightening ride with Mark Dalton. Let's jump right in.
You can find us on all major podcast platforms. 10 Minutes of Truth with Sean A. Barksdale.
Hello, everyone. Sean A. Barksdale of the 10 Minutes of Truth podcast. We are back once again for another exciting episode with Mr. Mark Dalton. How you doing, Mark?
I'm doing great, Sean.
Absolutely. If you haven't tuned in to our last episode, please go back and listen as we talked about relationships with car dealerships, relationships and with parents, relationships that the car owner has with their car. We got some great information. So please go back with that. Mark, once again, thank you again for being here. And I want to dive right back in where we left off at last week. I want to talk about selecting and distinguishing smart auto purchases, right? Of course, that's going to start with credit.
Sure.
Of course. So I want to talk about the significance of good credit score in the automobile purchase. What's a good credit score walking through the door?
You know, I think the number that our industry has always hung out there to be what's considered good credit is the 700 Beacon score.
Okay.
But at the same time, that doesn't mean that someone with a 650 Beacon score is not considered good credit as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we see, I think I've got this right. I think the range is 300 to 900.
Mm-hmm.
I can honestly tell you I've never seen a 900.
Right.
We don't see too many over 800, but
right.
At the same time, that's a big range, and that it's extremely important factor when it comes to being able to afford more car, because that credit score can dramatically affect your interest rate, of course.
Absolutely, absolutely. With that being said, last time we talked about relationships, talked about cosigners, you explained what a cosigner was.
Mm-hmm.
What type of score would you have to that you need a cosigner?
Well, a lot of times it's not as much the score as it is the overall picture, because we see people with very limited credit that can, I'll give an example. Someone, maybe they just got out of school, they've got a credit card in their name, no car loan, no anything, but they can have a good credit score, maybe it's a 700, but they still need a cosigner for the simple fact that they don't have any history. And history is it's the number one factor when it comes to your credit score is history, but they don't have any history. So the bank's looking at it and says, well, they paid their credit card on time, but that's a very small amount of money. And can they maintain a car payment or a rent payment or a house payment, you know, even? So that's a big factor is history. So it's not necessarily just score related, because you'll see someone with a 500 Beacon that come in and they can buy a car on their own and not need a cosigner. So, but the 700 can. It just depends on
history. That history. Yeah. That history is very important.
Yes, it is.
How does credit score impact your current and future purchasing power?
Yeah, so your credit score, of course, can have dramatic effects on the interest rate, as I mentioned. And just not to jump ahead, but I made a couple notes for myself just to tell you how much it could affect a payment on a car. But if you were going in and you're looking at a $20,000 car, and you know interest rates today are a little more than they were 5 years ago, of course, but a really good interest rate today on a new car, a $20,000 car, would be, I use 6%. If you financed that car for 6 years at 6%, your payment would be $332 a month. That same car, let's just say that the credit is got a little bumper bruise. You know, good things happen to bad people. I mean, bad things happen to good people. And maybe they've got a 500B, 520 Beacon. Well, the bank looks at it and says, okay, well, we'll do this deal, but we're not going to give them this prime rate because they've had a few little bumps along the way. So it moves them to, I use an example of 15%. Sounds like a big jump, but it goes much higher than that. But that payment goes to $425 a month. You're talking about almost $90 a month more just in interest rate. I not to scare anyone, but it can get worse than that. Let's just say it's a four something Beacon. Bank says, I'll do this deal. I'll take the chance. I see that they had some medical challenges along the way, and maybe it wasn't their fault. It just, you know, a bad situation. You take that same $20,000 car and move it to a 25% interest rate. The payment goes to $544 a month. So now you're talking over $200 a month change from that really good rate to a margin, a higher rate, and just an interest rate. So credit score is extremely important because that's what's going to determine that is your credit score. So you know, it can make an affordable car unaffordable real quick line.
Speaking about that history, speaking about that history, you got any tips for maintaining or improving a credit score?
Yeah, so it's, you know, there's a lot of factors. I made some notes too because I couldn't remember all this off the top of my head. But your credit score, it seems like it's a real slow building process. You know, you watch that score and you go from
7701.
Yeah, exactly.
7703.
Yeah, yeah.
69.
Yeah. And then overnight, the next thing you know, you check it again the following month, and you know, it went from a 707 because I'm like, okay, well, it's looking good.
Right.
And it's 690. I didn't buy anything.
I didn't do anything.
So, how did it go to 690? Well, it's a very complicated formula, but if you look at Equifax, for example, which is the credit reporting agency, they 35% of your score is determined from simple payment history. So being on time, not being late, that's as simple as it gets. 35%, that's the highest percentage that affects your credit score is payment history. Second to that is the amount of money that you owe. So they see, okay, you have a credit availability, you've got two credit cards, and one's a $5,000 card and one's a $7,000 card, and you owe $4,500 on the first one and $6,500 on the second one. Okay, well, they don't have much credit availability there, and they've utilized a lot of that. That scares them a little bit. So that's 30% of your score right there, is how much you owe on those credit cards. Credit history length. And that's a tough one for a first-time buyer because they haven't had a chance to have any credit history. So so how long you've been in the system and how long you've been paying on time, obviously that comes into play. That's 15%. This is a big one. Credit applications. You know, when we talk about cars, if you come in to look at a car, and we send your credit application to 10 banks. It used to be that if one location sent your credit application out to 10 different banks, it would lower your score because you had 10 different banks looking at it. That's not the case. But if you come and look here and then a month later, you go to another dealership and they do the same thing. And a month later, you still haven't bought a car, you do it again, that will lower your score. That's 10% of your credit score is how many people are looking at it, because the bank looks at, or the credit agency looks at it and says, he or she is out shopping, and they're about to spend a lot of money, and it we better peel this back. It's all an algorithm. It does it automatically. It's nobody sitting there pushing buttons or anything like that. And then lastly is credit mix. You know, credit cards are important, and it's a good place to get started. You want to keep those balances as low as you can, and that's challenging at times. Keep those balances as low as you can, but you want you want something such as a home, a car, something that's got a regular payment that you make every month, not a revolving debt like a credit card. Credit card's important, but it doesn't build your credit nearly as fast as if you have a car payment or a mortgage that you're paying on. So, because that's a set amount every month, and it doesn't change. So, they really like that.
And of course, the reason that we do what we do is because this information isn't taught.
Right.
Unfortunately, you know, you probably had to go to college somewhere to learn it.
Yep.
And life experience, everyone needs it.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times we don't hear it. So thank you for those tidbits of information that we can put out into the community.
Certainly.
Moving right along, I want to talk about the psychology of purchasing cars, right? What's the difference in how a car is sold today versus when you first started?
Oh, boy. Well, you know, I remember, Sean, there's a big answer for that. I remember years ago when I started, and we would see that customer, and we you know, not make fun of, but we would joke internally, like, oh boy, here's a good one. And you know, you would say, hey, Johnny, you got this customer, I need to run the restroom or something like that, because they'd come in with a clipboard, and you know, they had done their research, they had checked their book value, and they had it all written down and so forth.
Right.
All of that's gone. That's changed.
Right.
And once upon a time, and I don't remember when this happened, it didn't happen overnight, but we, as a dealership, as a salesperson, had to embrace all of this information, right? When the internet comes along and you put all this information at a customer's fingertips, well, there was no reason to look at that as being a negative. We had to embrace it and say, okay, well, they've got all this information now. Let's use this and make sure that they buy with an informed decision process, and we sell with that same amount of knowledge. So today, you know, the average person, when it's time to go buy a car, they don't get in the car and they start driving from dealership to dealership like once upon a time, because that's how you had to search, right? And you searched within maybe a 30-mile radius or something. But today we've got shoppers that are shopping a really long ways away. This morning we had a lead come in from New York on a Volkswagen that we had, and he's probably going to buy. But we had a very unique car, and he found it online, and is coming in from New York to buy it. But so today a customer gets online and they start searching, just like everything, you know, it's at our fingertips. But there's alligators out there, and we need to be careful of that too, because you know that old saying, there's no free lunch. When you see that car that, you know, every one of them you looked at, that model, that mileage range, maybe they're $25,000 everywhere you've looked. But there's one 26, there's one for 24, but here's this one that's $19,000. Beware. It's a very competitive world that we live in, and as dealers, there's a story to come along with that.
Correct.
And we hear horror stories from customers that come in and they're like, I am exhausted with the buying process. I found this car online. I drove up to Northern Virginia. I get there, the car wasn't there, or it wasn't the car that they told me it was, or it had this or had that, and it's horrible.
Wow.
And so it happens, but there's no free lunches if and I wish there was, but if you see one that's extremely out of kilter when it comes to pricing, there's something up, you know. vehicle history reports are extremely important today because, you know, once upon a time, we didn't have Carfax, we didn't have AutoCheck, which is a vehicle history reporting agency, and you can see accident history and things like that.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, there's many cars. They've started distinguishing the difference in moderate, severe, and minor. You know, let me give you an example of a minor accident on a car history. You know, you're down at the shop and mall or at the grocery store, and lady lets her buggy run across and dings your car, and it's more than one that the paintless dent removal guys can get out. It requires body work. And when that insurance company is notified, or maybe the police show up and do a police report on it, it gets reported to these agencies. That would be considered minor. Moderate would be, you know, you're at a stoplight and somebody comes up and rear ends you, messes up your bumper, maybe causes a couple $1,000 worth of damage, you know, airbags didn't deploy or anything like that. That'd be considered moderate. And then severe is when you get into airbag deployments and things like that. So okay. Searching some of that, all of that information is at a customer's fingertips today.
And what was that site again? So say that one more time.
There's two sites that you can go to. One is called AutoCheck.
Okay.
AutoCheck is who we use. That's who all the auction companies use. AutoCheck is owned by a company called Equifax. Equifax is a credit reporting agency. It's pretty familiar with many customers. And we have found that it's a little more in-depth. It gives you a little more detail than Carfax does, but Carfax gives a similar report.
Mm.
And you can pay for those reports if you're looking. If you're looking at a car with us, we provide that. We have all that, and we can print one out for you on any car that you're looking at and recommend it. And that's different today than once upon a time. We didn't have vehicle history reports to where we could see what the history of a car was in the past, or, you know, sometimes it'll show maintenance records and things like that. So
okay. That's
different. Shopping prices today, this may be jumping ahead, but our pricing structure has changed over the years as a result of all this information at a customer's fingertips. You know, it used to be we would take a car and price it $24,995, you know, and at the end of the day, between negotiations and stuff, we might sell that car for $22,000, you know, because we had this markup that we had put in there to handle negotiations. Everybody wants to negotiate. Well, the thing in our industry has changed so much is all this information. Now, customers are shopping online. They're looking it up on their phone, looking up on their tablet. And so it took a lot of that out. I'm not saying we don't still negotiate. We do. But instead of thousands, it's hundreds now. Mm-hmm. And because if you don't put your best price out there on the World Wide Web, the phone doesn't ring, the emails don't come in. We have to price that car competitively to the market. If we don't, we don't get those calls. We don't get this guy calling from New York and
yep. Things
like that.
Wow.
But, you know, you have to price your car competitive today. Hmm. Unlike before, we could put it out there and negotiate the price down to make everybody feel good. And it's not the case. So, I'm not saying this just for us. If you go into a dealership and you're looking at a car and it's not here, no matter where it's at, you know, and the dealer says, well, that price, it is what it is. It's almost gone to a one price type thing. You know, and customers, one of their number one complaints is coming into a dealership saying, excuse me, oh, I hate the negotiation process. I hate it. I don't blame them. We hate it too.
Right.
You know, and as a result, this new business model that's evolved over the last 10 or 15 years has gradually gone into almost a one price thing. So
wow.
It's there's still some negotiations. You know, we as a dealer can still throw in extra benefits and things like that, but these big discounts are really a thing of the past because we've lowered the prices to be competitive.
What I heard was options from where to go, what to do. With that being said, has Terry gotten into selling electrical vehicles yet?
Yes.
You have?
Yes, we have. We have Volkswagen. Volkswagen's model is called the ID4.
Okay.
And we've had that now for 2 years. And we also have Subaru. We have a Solterra. And this is the second year that we've had that car. And, you know, electric cars, that's a big topic. Mm. But I truly believe that electric cars are here to stay. Are they going to change dramatically from what we see today? Yeah, I think so. But there's a paradigm shift that needs to take place within our minds, because it's no different than the cell phone. We don't use the cell phone until it gets down to one bar on our battery, and then plug it in and charge it. Many of us plug that cell phone in every single night.
Correct.
Whether it's half battery or three quarters battery or a quarter, we plug it in every night regardless. The next morning we get up, we got a full battery.
Correct.
And off we go. We know it's going to last us all day long. Electric cars are the exact same thing. We have to have a paradigm shift. That unlike our car today, we run until it gets a quarter of a tank of fuel, then we stop and fill it up. Yep. We don't do that with electric cars. We plug that car in every single night, and it's good for the entire next day. Many customers are not driving anywhere near the limits on these electric cars every day. Some are driving more, and that maybe isn't the car for them. But there's so many people. There's not many people driving over 250 miles a day.
Right.
And that's the range on these many of these cars. And it's climbing. It's climbing every time they design a new one or a new design on a battery, these ranges are climbing.
Wow.
It won't surprise me if another 5 years we have cars running 1,000, 1,500 miles on a charge.
Wow.
But today, at a minimum, you're looking at 250 miles. And you think about your average daily commute. Most people are not driving that kind of mileage.
That's right.
So if they plug that car in every single night, they're good to go. And it makes a lot of sense. But the electric market, I think there's lots of changes to come. There's some really good tax credits that come with those cars. If the car qualifies, and it has to qualify, because it's a very complex process on determining whether it qualifies or not. And it's the materials that are used to build the battery has to meet certain qualifications. And if it does, the government gives you a $7,500 tax credit on that car. So it's a rebate.
And, wow.
So there's a lot of benefits to these cars. But they're taking off a little slow.
Right.
Because I call it nostalgia buyers. There was a lot of people intrigued by electric cars, and they went out and bought them. And you know, Tesla, I guess, was the brand that led this whole march. And there's a lot of Teslas. We sell used Teslas all the time.
Hmm.
And it's an excellent car. But the demand has just had a hard time accepting this change. So we're seeing a lot of manufacturers now starting to switch over to hybrid vehicles.
Hybrid, yeah.
And yep. I do believe that hybrid, you're going to see a lot coming from that technology in the next 5 years. Maybe, I don't want to say that it'll surpass the electric market, but I certainly won't be surprised.
Hmm. Yeah. With that being said, talk about the government rebates, things of that nature. Our government has pumped a lot of money into clean energy.
Yeah.
So with that being said, and the transition, have you had to take any type of training on clean energy, your staff, things of that nature?
So specific to the electric car, yes, we have spent an enormous amount of money on training. Some of the special tools and the equipment and the special training, they each manufacturer requires us to have a certain area on our parking lot. If an electric car is having a battery issue, that car has to have a unique spot that there's no cars around it in the event that there was an electrical fire or anything like that. There's a lot of requirements that follow that. You know, we had to install extremely expensive battery chargers. We got two high-speed chargers that were extremely expensive, and And there's much more of that to come, I'm certain of it, from the manufacturer requiring to have this training, this technology, the special tools. It's been a journey.
Right. And, I'm sure.
But I think it's here to stay. I don't think it's going away, but I don't think it's going to grow quite as fast as everybody
people thought.
Predicted.
Okay.
Yeah. And I say that from the manufacturers were pushing it really hard. Many manufacturers made some bold statements early on, and I think they're eating their words now, but they made bold statements saying, even our brand, Volkswagen, I don't remember what year this was, but I'm going to make it up and say it was 4, 5, 6 years ago. They said by 2026 that we would not have an internal combustion engine.
Mm.
Well, no.
Not yet, huh?
No, we will have internal combustion engines for a long time.
Right.
Right. And not to get into the government thing, but
right.
but the government has pushed for this extremely hard as well,
right.
And it's just not taking right. off quite at the pace that they expect.
Right, not going to linger too hard on it, but as you were saying, the paradigm shift, the mind has to wrap around it.
Yes, it does.
We're used to, you think, since. You know, Henry mm-hmm. Ford, mm-hmm. this is what we've known, this right. is what we're comfortable with. Doesn't mean that it's right or wrong,
right.
or what's best or not. It's just what we're used to.
That's right.
And people are used to with familiarity,
yeah.
you know what I'm
yeah.
saying, and whatnot, right? I know I butchered that, y'all. Don't come for me.
we talk about this shift, this is not a car, this is a lawnmower. I have a very small lawn, and at little cabin, a hunt cabin, and
okay.
I needed a new lawnmower, and needed nothing more than a push mower.
Right.
And I go and I see these electric push mowers, and I thought, this makes sense, or it's battery power, I mean. And so I go and buy one, and the first time I use it, you know, I look at the battery life, and it only used a quarter of the battery to mow the entire lawn. Well, back to our cell phone thing, so I didn't charge it, right?
Mm.
So. A week later, I go back to mow the grass again. It had 3/4 of a battery, but the same lawn this time,
yep.
it didn't make it.
Right.
It didn't make the whole charge. So now I'm mad, and I'm like, why did I buy this battery-powered lawnmower? What was I thinking? I should have just been able to put
right.
gas in it and keep going. Well, I quickly realized I just have to adjust my thinking. I have to charge it every time I use it.
That's it.
And I've had it 2 years now, and it works great. I've never had a problem.
Yep. So. Yep, and that's a great way to
good
look
stuff.
At it,
yeah.
especially with the framing of that battery for a phone, because it's not only just the usage of it, but the demand.
That's correct.
You know, when a person understands the demand
yeah.
for that, the,
yeah.
you know, I want to switch gears a little bit here because I want the audience to understand the information that of course, that I'm getting, but that we're all getting. You're giving us some really powerful information.
Thank you.
I want to frame something here. Let's say we have a young lady, single, 30 years old,
mm-hmm.
two kids,
mm-hmm.
right? It's income tax time.
Mm-hmm.
How would you guide this young lady on purchasing and payments?
So, you know, you mentioned something there, Sean, that is extremely important to a lender.
Right.
And obviously, just a reminder, we don't make these credit decisions. We send
right.
them to lenders, and we have many fantastic ones that work with us. But... you know, when we send that information over to a lender, something you just mentioned, it's tax time, you know, and maybe she's got a decent refund coming and it's not allocated for other living expenses, and she's allotted, I'm making this up, $2,000
mm-hmm.
toward the purchase of a car. That gets a lender's attention quick-like, because if you put yourself in that lender's shoes or put the lender hat on, and you see someone making an upfront investment of $2,000, no matter what the price range car that
right.
they're buying, they make an upfront investment. They're willing to commit to turning that amount of money over. That says a lot to that lender, for the simple fact they know that this person's planning to pay for this car. If they weren't, they wouldn't throw that money in. They would come into it with no money down.
Right.
You know, there's a lot more risk. It sets a precedence for the lender that this person's planning to pay for this. So money down is extremely important. That's not the, not everybody can do that. And we see it every day. There's many, many cars that we sell with no money down whatsoever. But if you've had a credit challenge, that's the quickest way to start getting yourself back is mm-hmm. to show some effort by putting money down. It shows the lender your intentions. It's extremely important. Not required, but extremely important for her.
So, yeah, that's good to know, because talking about the factors to consider, right, mm-hmm. when choosing a payment plan, I'm glad that you said that, because that's what you look at, you mm-hmm. know, the sincerity of a person, right?
Sure.
So let's just say a person choosing a payment plan and they take a pay cut, mm-hmm. right? How can they get a reduction in payment?
So a reduction in payment would simply come from refinancing that car.
Okay.
Once you make an agreement and you sign a contract with that lender that your payment, I'm making this up, $350 a month, and you hit a bump in the road, communication is key.
Mm-hmm.
You want to call that lender and say, listen, you know, I just lost my job, or I've been out of work. I had a car accident and broke my leg and so forth. But my intentions are to still pay for this. Communication is key. You want to definitely keep everybody in the know. But you definitely, to lower that payment, you would reach out to that lender or another lender if you so desire. And you can refinance that car. Maybe your original financing term was $30,000 and you've had it for a year and now you owe $22,000. So you go back out. That car may still qualify for the same term that it qualified for the first time.
Okay.
Maybe it was a 6-year term. Yes, you're refinancing for another 6 years, but maybe you lower your payment by $60 or $70 and it makes it palatable.
Mm.
So we see that, and that's certainly possible. So.
Okay. Talking about that right there, financing, right? So how wise are this auto purchase contribute to long-term financial stability, right? Let's talk about in-house financing versus outside financing.
Yeah.
What does financing mean, first of all, right, to the first-time buyer?
Yeah, so financing is the lender's portion, the interest that you're going to be paying. Financing, that's the interest, but financing is when you're looking at that $20,000 car and you don't have $20,000, but you need a car, and many people do. We finance close to 70% of the cars that we sell, so it's very common. But you're willing to make a monthly payment. You just can't make the $20,000 up front, but maybe you can afford $350, $400 a month, whatever it may be. And so you've got a lender that says, okay, well, I'll give you the $20,000, but in exchange, I need to make something on this. And that's mm-hmm. where his interest comes in, and that's his profit. He has a cost to that money, so it's not all profit to him.
Right.
But using this example that I used earlier, you know, you've got good credit, and you get a 6% interest rate. Well, whatever that 6% generates for that lender, much of that is profit for him, but he's willing to say, I'll give you the money up front and you pay me back.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the terms that we're doing it on. So
absolutely. Yeah. So that you guys can understand what Mark just said, if you're a first time buyer, you might be a teenager. My car, I got financed through Navy Federal, mm-hmm. my first vehicle, right? So car was $15,000,
mm-hmm.
all right? They put nice interest rate on it. I paid $300 per month, $303 to be a matter of mm-hmm. fact, for 5 years. I ended up paying $18,000 mm-hmm. for the car. Not too bad, but that's $3,000. So they made $3,000 on their money. So before you go in, you should do some research, do some history on, is it going, you know, call around like Mark said and say, is this going to be better if I finance in or out?
Right.
Right. So you need to know that information is very important, right?
Sean, that makes me think of a story years ago when I was a child and my dad, unfortunately, my parents got a divorce. When they got a divorce, other than our house, my parents had paid cash for everything and mm-hmm. they had older cars, nothing new. But if they bought a car, they paid cash for it, or they didn't buy one. Well, I think that was maybe a little more common way back when than it is today. We society today is, yes, is we're more apt to go out and finance a car or finance things that we want. But anyway, so my parents divorced. My dad decided he wanted a new vehicle, our newer vehicle, not brand new. And he goes out looking. He finds something that he likes, and he didn't have that much money. It was the first time he'd ever financed a vehicle, so he fills out a credit application. And at that time, I'm guessing my dad was in his 40s, and he got turned down. The bank would not approve him, and he came home. He was all disappointed, and here I was, a young teenager, and I'm like, I didn't understand any of that. And I said, Dad, what's wrong? What do you mean the bank wouldn't give you the money? He said, well, I didn't have a credit score. He said, I'd never financed anything other than our house, and it had been so long ago that I'd had zero on my credit score, so they wouldn't finance me.
Wow.
And I said, well, what are you going to do? And he said, well, he said, they recommended that I go get a credit card and establish a credit score, and maybe in a year I can come back and do it. And to watch my dad, you know, be disappointed was challenging for me, but it was a big lesson for me because there's times, maybe we've got the money. Maybe you, at the time when you bought that car, maybe you had the $15,000 to pay for it.
But I didn't know. Right.
We'll pretend that you
did. Yeah, right.
So, but at the same time, financing is good because mm-hmm. it does build credit history. You know, keep it in check. We don't want to let credit cards get out of hand and all that type of stuff. But it will maintain some level of stability for you. So if there was an emergency and you said, hey, I don't want to do this, but this, I'm going to go out and finance this, whatever that I want to buy.
Right.
And it's an option. And I learned it firsthand with my dad.
That stuck with you.
Yeah.
Things like that do stick with you. I also want to explain a little bit to Mark about when a car is financed. You have a kid, then they'll say, look, $25,000, financed it. What happens to the title?
So once upon a time, there was a paper title, and the bank held those titles.
Right.
They were listed as lien holders. So they had control. You couldn't just go sell that car and get money for it because you couldn't get that title until you paid it off. And now everything is electronic. We can certainly, the DMV can print paper titles, but now there's not a paper title printed that the bank is actually holding. They record an electronic lien on that title, and then when you pay it off, then the DMV then prints a title for you at that point.
But
but there's no paper title until the car's paid off or
absolutely
or sent somewhere.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, ladies and gentlemen, pay your debts.
Yes.
So you can have what you are paying for. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, we have had Mr. Mark Dalton here for this exciting episode where we learned a lot. We've been learning a lot of valuable information, man. You're a wealth of knowledge when it comes to auto.
A lot of experience.
Stay tuned. Like we said, if you haven't heard the last episode, go back, listen to that episode, and it will flow right into this episode. And stay tuned for our next episode. Deshaun A. Barksdale, 10 Minutes of Truth. Thank you.
You can find us on all major podcast platforms. 10 Minutes of Truth with Sean A. Barksdale.
Hitachi Energy is the pioneering technology leader dedicated to advancing the world's energy system to be more sustainable, flexible, and secure.